Chapter 4. Before nightfall, the camp received more than 36 additional ever-after refugees. They looked tired and broken. Many spoke of burned homes and businesses, shattered lives, and destitution. Others shared warnings of brutal beatings, threats, and murder. When they came in, Mr. Canis called them guests, and informed them that to join the camp, they had an obligation to all the others. Each person would be assigned tasks in the morning, based on their occupations or talents, but until then they should try to relax and get some rest. Robin Hood and his wife Marian led the newcomers on a tour, and to the supply tent for fresh clothes. They were all given hot meals and promised clean bunks. Charming marched through the camp, pulling people aside, and letting them know about the hobgoblin attack. The story seemed to startle everyone, especially those who had just fled chaos.
"I told you this would happen. They are bringing the fight to us," the prince said. "It's time to prepare for war."
His call for action didn't produce the reaction Sabrina suspected Charming was seeking. He was largely ignored. Many of the ever-afters said they didn't want to get involved, even if they were shaken by the prince's dark predictions. At the end of the day, only 6 of the refugees volunteered to join Snow White's militia. Dinner was served in the courtyard as the sun sank below the tree line. A witch conjured 100 tables and enough folding chairs for everyone. The magic tables came complete with plates, utensils, and drinking glasses. Oil lamps were strung from trees for light. Everyone filed through a long line for their share of beans, brown bread, a potato, and an ear of corn. Sabrina and her family, along with Red, dined together at a table. Mr. Canis was invited to join, but claimed he needed to get back to his meditation. Goldilocks and her bears were invited as well, but Henry's former girlfriend seemed nervous around him. She claimed she and the bears had already made dinner arrangements. Sabrina's mother didn't seem at all heartbroken by Goldilocks' rejection, but she said nothing. Geppetto and Pinocchio, however, happily accepted the invite.
"Good day, all," Pinocchio said. "My father has spoken highly of your family. He considers you some of his dearest friends. I'm quite honored to make your acquaintance."
Sabrina couldn't help staring at the boy. If the story was true, Geppetto had carved him from a solid block of wood. But what threw her off more was the way he spoke. He was so proper and mature.
"Nice to meet you too," Granny Relda said. "Your father has missed you terribly."
"Indeed," Geppetto said, giving the boy a hug.
"So, where have you been?" Daphne asked the odd little boy.
"Daphne, that's a little rude," Veronica said. "That's Pinocchio's business." Daphne shrugged.
"Just making conversation." "Well, it's not much of a tale," the little boy said.
"Then skip it," Puck said, filling his mouth with beans. "We spent entirely too much time discussing things other than me."
Granny rolled her eyes.
"Please, Pinocchio, go on."
"I'm confident Papa told you about our missed connection aboard Wilhelm's vessel."
"What's a vessel?" Daphne asked.
"The layman calls it a boat," Pinocchio explained. "I have never cared for the sea. I had a very disturbing encounter with a great white shark once. I also had a bit of trouble on an island off the coast of Italy. Thus, I try to stay landlocked as much as possible."
"I wonder how hard it would be to hide a shark under someone's pillow," Puck said, squinting at Sabrina.
She shook a threatening fist at him. Pinocchio continued his tale.
"So I stayed in Europe and took a few odd jobs. I was an apprentice at a newspaper and learned to work with a printing press. The paper wasn't much to speak of, mostly propaganda and smears. I was an artist's assistant for a few years. I sold kites in a market in Spain. I lived in the Taj Mahal for a month before security guards found me and tossed me out. I was a shoeshine boy on the Orient Express. I've had a number of occupations and saw a great many places. I even journeyed back to my home in Italy. Papa, I believe I found the actual forest I came from and met a great many of my relatives. It was very enlightening."
"You found the magic forest," Geppetto said, clapping his hands. "I found a log inside it and used it to carve my son.
I had heard it was destroyed by a forest fire.
Sad but true, though a few saplings survived the blaze, the boy said.
Why are they moving? Granny Relda asked.
It's due to my condition, Pinocchio explained.
Condition? Puck asked. Do you have some horrible virus? If so, could you give it to Sabrina?
Pinocchio ignored him.
It appears that I am incapable of growing old. Every few years I was forced to vanish before anyone could conclude I wasn't getting older. I made the horrible blunder of sticking around for too long once in Eastern Europe, and the superstitious townspeople chased me with torches and pitchforks. Do yourself a favor and stay away from Transylvania.
It's 'cause you're in Ever After. You have to decide to get older, or you'll stay the same age forever, Daphne explained.
Alas, no, the boy replied. I cannot get older. I believe it has to do with the wish I made to the Blue Fairy. I wished to be a real boy, not to be a real boy that grows into a man.
You have to be real specific with wishes, Sabrina said.
Indeed, the boy groaned. The Blue Fairy lives here in town, Daphne said. We could help you find her. She might fix the wish.
Thank you, but no, Pinocchio said.
Like your sister said, her wish-granting leaves a little to be desired. I might ask her to let me grow up, and she'd probably make it so that I grew all the way to the moon. I'll seek other options.
I'd like to know how you ended up here in the camp, Henry asked. Pinocchio shifted uncomfortably.
I had a great deal of savings from my many occupations, and these days anyone can purchase an airplane ticket on the internet. I landed in New York City and boarded the next train for Ferryport Landing. It was immediately clear that trouble was afoot, but I searched for my father nonetheless. I met a young man who had a pumpkin for a head. He was quite peculiar.
Jack Pumpkinhead, Granny said. He's from Oz. They're all a little odd.
I told him who I was, and he offered to bring me to the camp.
And I couldn't be happier, Pine Nut, Geppetto said. After dinner, you will have to show everyone your marionettes.
Granny smiled.
So you are a puppet maker as well? Like father, like son, I suppose, the boy said.
Geppetto beamed with pride. They hugged again. Sabrina looked over at her own father, hoping he might be inspired by the family feeling, but he was busy studying a map of the town. It was clear he was looking for another path out to Ferryport Landing. Just then, Nurse Spratt approached the table. She was an overweight woman shaped like a nearly perfect circle. The family had met her at her former job as a nurse at Ferryport Landing Memorial Hospital, where she had had the unfortunate responsibility of looking after Red Riding Hood when she was mentally unhinged.
"Jacob is going to be fine," she told the group.
"Thank goodness," Granny cried.
"Normally he would be healing for a couple of months, but I found a container of magical salve in his pocket, and it's doing wonders. He should be shipshape in a couple of days."
"Can we see him?" Henry asked.
"Tomorrow," she said. "He's sleeping and needs the rest."
"Thank you so much, Mrs. Spratt," Granny said.
"You're welcome, Mrs. Grimm," she said,
then returned to her medical tent. For the first time since her mother and father had awoken, there were smiles on everyone's faces. Sabrina reveled in the moment. It was just what she had wanted, just like it had been before her parents disappeared and all the craziness began. But it was a short-lived celebration. A loud bell rang and the gates of the fort opened. Robin Hood and his men marched inside with a dozen of the hobgoblins Henry and Veronica had pummeled earlier that day. The brutes were tied together at the wrists and then linked by a single heavy chain. They grunted and complained as they were roughly shoved along. Charming appeared and ordered the men to lock all of the creatures in his cabin. He pulled Little John and Will Scarlet from the group and ordered them to have the prisoners guarded 24 hours a day.
"We can't have them escape before we question them."
"You can forget interrogation," one of the hobgoblins barked. "You won't get anything out of us."
Snow White, who had appeared in the courtyard for dinner still in her fatigues, cracked her knuckles loudly.
We'll just see about that.
Relda, you seem to have a knack for getting information. Could you help? Charming asked.
She's not part of your war, Henry said.
Granny stood up. I'll do what I can.
Sabrina watched her father quietly seethe. After dinner, the girls went on a walk to give their parents some privacy. It was clear another argument was brewing, and Sabrina had had enough fighting. Puck followed them. Sabrina tried to ignore him, as he was being especially annoying, and had already driven her to the brink of murder several times that day. They wandered aimlessly around the fort, taking in the strange sights, until Daphne spotted Red Riding Hood sitting behind Charming's cabin. Daphne rushed over and sat down next to her.
Hey, she said. Hey.
Red forced a smile on her face.
Are you hiding back here?
Red nodded.
I'm trying to stay out of the way. I don't want to be any trouble.
I'm all about trouble,
Puck crowed. Sabrina leaned against the cabin and pretended to be fascinated with a dusty stone near her foot. She did not want to have a conversation with Red and was surprised by Daphne's acceptance of the demented child. Just a few days ago, Red was locked up in an insane asylum for trying to kill Sabrina's family. And now, with a little magical help, she was cured and living with the Grimms. It was obvious that this new Red needed some comfort, but why should Sabrina have to give it?
You're not trouble, Daphne said. Granny invited you to live with us, so that makes you one of us. You don't have to run off and hide. Your grandmother is very kind,
Red said.
My grandmother is gravy, Daphne agreed. You'll be safe with her, and plus, she's an excellent cook.
Sabrina laughed out loud, and Daphne flashed her an angry look.
Well, you shouldn't lie to her, Sabrina said defensively.
Daphne turned back to Red Riding Hood.
Like I was saying, Granny's a great cook, and soon you will have your own room. Granny promised to build me one, too. Maybe you and I could have a secret door that leads into each other's rooms, one only we know about. I would like that,
Red said, grinning. Sabrina bristled. The first time the girls had slept in separate beds had been the night before. Daphne had refused to share a bedroom after Sabrina had lied and stolen from her. Apparently, her sister's desire to have her own room hadn't gone away yet. Sabrina knew what she had done was wrong,
but they were sisters.
Wasn't blood thicker than water? Or whatever the saying was that meant you had to forgive your family's mistakes? Prince Charming's booming voice exploded from a window directly above them.
What's going on?
Red asked.
I think they're questioning a hobgoblin, Sabrina said, as she got up on her tiptoes to get a peek in the window.
The rest of the children did the same, elbowing one another for a good view. Inside, Sabrina saw a hobgoblin sitting on a chair. His hands were still bound, and he looked exhausted. Charming and Snow hovered over him, while Granny sat in a chair patiently. Mr. Canis and Mr. Seven looked on.
Does the master know where our camp is?
Charming barked. The hobgoblin smiled and dipped his head.
Not yet, Prince, but soon.
Charming turned to Mr. Canis, and they exchanged a worried look. Snow and Mr. Seven, who stood on the opposite side of the room, shared the same worried expression. Granny Relda, however, seemed relaxed.
You speak of the master as if you know him. Who is he?
Granny Relda asked. Sabrina's heart skipped a beat. She, too, had wondered who the master was and why he had caused so much heartache for her family. The hobgoblin snorted a laugh.
I have not earned the honor of sharing the presence of the master, but one day I hope to meet him in person and kneel before his feet.
So you take orders from someone you have never met?
Snow asked.
I do not need to meet the man when his genius is so clear. He has a glorious plan for ever-afters.
He barked at her.
Not all ever-afters,
Ms. White corrected him.
He has no use for many of us.
Nonsense! You have turned your back on him. You've turned your back on all of us,
the hobgoblin cried earnestly. You and Charming and the rest of your ilk mingle with the humans. Worse, you conspire with the Grimm family, the very people responsible for our imprisonment. The master says you are traitors to our race. What does your master plan to do about it? Charming asked.
He will free us, of course, the commander said smugly. He will destroy the barrier that traps us here, and we will march through every nation, recapturing land and treasure from the weak and pathetic human population, then ruling over them as it was always meant to be.
Charming rolled his eyes.
I've heard enough from this fool. Was he searched?
Seven, who had been sitting directly beneath the window, stepped forward and handed Charming a filthy burlap sack. The prince emptied it onto a nearby table and studied each item. A rusty dagger covered in what looked like dried blood, a couple loaves of moldy bread, a compass, a map of the woods, and a small pocket mirror. Charming looked at the mirror with some amusement. I had no idea hobgoblins were so vain. The hobgoblin chuckled, sending a shiver through Sabrina. It was not a nervous laugh. It was the sound of someone who knows a secret. Charming frowned, then turned to Granny Relda. Mrs. Grimm, I have a favor to ask. Daphne elbowed some more space at the window.
I can't see. What are they talking about?
The master, Sabrina said.
Oh, he gives me the shudders, the little girl said.
The ugly one says he wants to take over the world, Puck added. Been there, done that.
Did he tell who the master is?
Daphne asked.
Puck shook his head.
Not even a hint.
Wait a minute,
Sabrina said, turning and crouching next to Red.
Haven't you seen the master?
Red Riding Hood shifted uncomfortably and looked away.
Yes, you have, Sabrina cried. You told us that you had talked to him when you first attacked us with the Jabberwocky.
I don't remember, the child said.
Sure you do, Sabrina said. Who is he?
It's blurry,
Red said, as she clamped her hands onto her head. The subject seemed to cause her physical pain. Sabrina was so excited she could hardly talk.
Try. If you tell us who he is, then Charming can send people to capture him. Then no one else will be hurt.
I don't think I can,
Red whimpered.
You have to!
Daphne stepped between her sister and Red.
Sabrina, leave her alone. She says she doesn't remember.
She's not trying, Sabrina said.
Her memory is messed up. Don't you remember what Mr. Canis said? Since his madness has gone, he can't remember big parts of his life. It's the same with Red, Daphne said.
Daphne, she's got to remember. Stopping the master will end all this nonsense.
The town will go back to normal, and we can go back to New York City.
What? You don't want to stay?
Puck said.
Duh, Sabrina said, spinning on him. I've wanted to get out of this town since the first day I stepped into it. My mom and dad were supposed to make that happen, but of course ever afters have to get in the way.
Don't duh me, Puck snapped. Trying to figure out what you're thinking from one day to the next takes more brains than I have.
Well, maybe you should stop. I'd hate to burn out that little peanut in your head.
You wish you were more like me, Grimm. I'm magnificent,
Puck said, puffing up his chest. Sabrina's face twisted in anger.
Magnificently smelly. I doubt too many people would list themselves as exceptional when their greatest talent is eating with their feet.
Daphne laughed, but clamped a hand on her mouth when Puck glared at her. Red watched, bewildered.
Are you two in love or something?
Daphne lost it and fell to the ground, rolling and laughing beyond control. Perhaps it was Daphne's amusement or Red's embarrassing question, but before Sabrina could stop herself, she blurted out the one thing she promised herself she would never tell, the truth.
In love? As if? How on earth we end up getting married is beyond me. How could I have held my nose long enough to get through the ceremony? Ugh!
There was a silence unlike anything Sabrina had ever experienced. It felt as if someone had turned the volume knob on the world to the off position. Her sister's giggling expression was now replaced with shock. Even Red seemed bewildered. Sabrina was sure she was about to hyperventilate. She closed her eyes and quietly prayed for another rip in time, one that would allow her to go back and kick herself in the rear before she opened her dumb trap. All she could do was hope that Puck was as slow as he seemed and that he wouldn't understand what she had said. But his face said otherwise.
Married?
It's nothing, Daphne said, trying to dispel the tension.
Puck's huge, insect-like wings popped out of his back and lifted him off the ground. He rose a few feet above them and hovered there, flapping his wings furiously.
Tell me now, he shouted.
Sabrina tried to talk, but all she could do was stammer. Daphne stepped in to explain.
Do you remember when Cinderella's husband built the time machine that nearly ate the town? Well, we got pulled into it a couple times and saw the future, and...
No!
Puck cried before Daphne could finish. The little girl nodded.
You two are married in the future, Daphne confirmed.
Puck's wings were beating so hard and fast he was shaking the air around him.
I'm a little boy! Little boys do not get married!
Sabrina's face was so hot, she felt she had somehow taken over the work of the sun.
You grew up!
Puck's face fell.
What would make me do that?
Daphne pointed to Sabrina.
I would never do that!
Puck roared.
You're already doing it, Daphne said. Haven't you noticed you've gotten taller lately? I heard Granny tell Mr. Canis you were going through puberty.
What's that?
Daphne shrugged and looked to Sabrina.
Oh, now I'm good for definitions?
She fumed. Sabrina had never dreaded explaining a word more than at that moment.
Puberty is when a child starts to become an adult. You're going to get taller and grow hair on your face and get zits.
This puberty you speak of, it must be triggered by some kind of disease. You've given me your cooties, dog face.
Puck, you're not sick,
Sabrina said, trying to calm him down. Blistering flames shot out of Puck's eyes.
I am the Trickster King. I'm a villain. I am the king of loafers, the prince of low expectations, the spiritual guide from millions of complainers, criminals, and convicts. Villains do not get married. They do not get zits. You have poisoned me, Sabrina Grimm. This means war.
War?
Sabrina repeated.
Yes, war. And when I'm done, you'll wish the Scarlet Hand had gotten to you first.
Puck blasted into the sky like a rocket. He went so fast, there was a loud boom, and then he was gone.
That went better than I expected, Daphne said.
Before Sabrina could respond, Uncle Jake staggered around the corner. His arm was bandaged in a sling that hung around his neck. He looked pale and in a great deal of pain.
Girls, I've been looking everywhere for you. I need your help.
Uncle Jake, you should be in bed, Daphne scolded.
I can't. I have to go, he said.
Go where?
Sabrina asked.
To rescue Briar Rose, and I need you to help me.